Hi, it's Gavin.
And Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.
Pretty much by day, I am working in a legal field. By night, I'm on stage.
You're Whitney Houston.
Wigs as Whitney Houston.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
We normally start the profile interview by asking all of our guests if they wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit of their own faith journey. So can I ask you, what did faith look like for you growing up? Were you raised in a Christian home, or did you find faith at some point in your life?
Yeah, so earlier on, I have always, been born and brought up into the Christian faith. Very blessed to have a father and a mother who was prayed together, especially my mum. She was really, she lived by a family that prays together, stays together, so encouraged us to make sure we were always going to church. It was sort of the divide in terms of denomination. So I'm born and brought up as a Catholic on my mum's side. My dad's all Baptist. So there was a time when we were younger, my brother and sister and I, we used to go between Catholic and Baptist, and there was that sense of confusion and, of course, preference at a time when you're still growing and understanding your faith. I was baptized in the Catholic Church, had a Holy Communion, went to a Catholic school, and that's what I was used to growing up. But at times, we'd also fulfill my father's side of going to the Baptist Church, and that's almost where I fell in love with music and gospel music and songs of praise and worship, which is different to the way of worship in the Catholic Church. So, of course, it was also, I'd say, a confusing time, but I love to appreciate both sense and different ways of worship and deepening my relationship with God. So over time, I wanted to find out how I could best serve in the church. And in my Baptist church, it was through music, being in the band, being accustomed to songs of praises and a different way of worship. And the Catholic Church, I fell in love with just working with young people and the youths and applying some of scripture and the faith journey, my experience in the youth in our church. So it almost sort of brought together different ways of being able to develop my own faith and identify who I was and my relationship with God. So
that's really interesting. Like, how did your parents navigate that at home within their own marriage? Because they are very different traditions.
Yeah, it is very different. Yeah. And I think, as long as we had a relationship with God, I think that was the main thing that my mum was concerned. My dad was almost still practicing. He'd still go to church often, but it was my mum that was more practicing Catholic. So, it was always the case of, following her to church and getting involved and making sure that we were present and, making an effort to develop our relationship with God in that sense. So it was almost sort of confusing for us, but at the same time, it was a routine and it was like you had to go to church. There was no option. And
so it was just just given the decision every Sunday? Like, you can go with dad to the Baptist church, or you can go with mum, but one or other, you're going somewhere.
It was. But the things, we'd all go together. So we'd never split as one church or another. We'd always make sure we go together. So maybe it was, like in a month, maybe once a month, we'd go to the Baptist church. And it was a way of my dad being able to, identify through his denomination. And we had a community there that we were really close with as well. Again, like I said, I found my voice in music through the Baptist church, and they welcomed me. I still felt part of that family, although I probably identified more in the Catholic Church. So thinking and praying about it, I think I'll definitely say that was my entry into the love of music and just worship. And I feel that even though at a much younger age, I still had a sense of, you know, passion for music, being able to have almost like a stage presence to lead the congregation in worship felt very special to me. And I felt that that was something that I never thought I could do. And I'll go on to talk about, you know, the anxiety of being on stage and having a few panic attacks once in a while, but I felt comfortable. It was almost like a safe space for me, and they trusted me to be able to lead songs. And that's nothing, that's something I'd never experienced before. So yeah, it was an experience for me. Like I said, I built a community there, and, you know, still in contact with a few musicians that I met through there as well. So having found my way back into the Catholic Church and serving in different ways, I've been able to bring those, the elements and, you know, the skills and the passion and, you know, the faith, you know, I carried it along with me. And yeah, I felt it's definitely worthwhile and an experience, I guess, a faith, part of my faith journey that I won't forget.
So how old were you when you decided, okay, I want to own this for myself and I want to be part of the Catholic Church? When did that decision come for you and why?
I think probably after my confirmation. I think when we go back to being confirmed through secondary school, again, I was in a Catholic secondary school. I think that's when I sort of developed my like prayerful life, and I met a few mentors within the church as well that, you know, I was able to freely speak to, pray with, they'd pray for me. I think that's when I sort of, you know, I was involved with the church. I started a youth group. I identified an area where I thought there's a lot of young people in our church. Why isn't there a space for us to, you know, sit together and feel that we're having to, you know, tag along with our parents and our family and through other denominations? I come from a big like African household, so there are other different denominations where parts of my family on my dad's side, or part of my grandma was almost a strong leader in her church called Mountain of Fire, and these are really hardcore Pentecostal churches that once in a while family occasions, you know, celebrations we'd attend, and I'd see that there's this strong young community within their churches that I didn't see in the Catholic Church. And there were so many, and there was probably a desire for it, but nobody had ever established it. So along with some of my friends and mentors in my church, we were able to establish something at an earlier stage. And in the community and other Catholic churches around, they hadn't yet established that. And they were looking to us, like, how did you do it? How do you have all these strong young people who are passionate about doing it? And, you know, supporting charities, we'd have youth groups every Friday, we'd sit and study scripture and have fun at the same time, we'd put productions together, Easter, Christmas, choirs, and this is something that I built over time. But to be a part of that and to also establish that was, yeah, again, very special, and it's something that has definitely changed the, I guess, the younger generation in our church, I feel.
So, like, we you know, we're talking about young people quite a lot at the moment. All this kind of Gen Z research, and like, are young people like more spiritually open than ever before? Is that something you're seeing in your church spaces?
Yeah, I think it's different to when we first grew up, I guess, and now everything's about social media, and I think there's a lie. You don't want to be too heavy on the socials and, you know, the influencers and all of that. But I feel that there's a way to still capture that generation as well. And there's a balance, I feel. I mean, like I said, we didn't have that as much. Okay, there was a bit of Facebook and other social platforms there. But it was all about the meeting, the greeting in person. It was about sitting down and being able to sit amongst young, like-minded group of young people. And now I think everything's mostly heavy on what's on the social media and that, and being able to still implement that and have a presence is, it's possible, but you have to, I think there's a balance, and it makes it a little bit difficult or a little bit harder. But yeah, I still feel that there are still those who really identify with their faith and aren't ashamed or scared to be able to, you know, announce their faith and who they are, which is positive. So yeah, just a different shift, I think.
It is really interesting, isn't it? And I find this, the social media thing, fascinating, because on the one hand, like you say, you know, it's such a pressure on young people, and it, you know, you've got all the danger of sort of creating this perfectly curated life that, you know, does not exist in real life. But on the other hand, you know, you've got these really exciting things happen. Like when you've got national newspapers talking about like what's happening amongst our, you know, new crop of like young black footballers all talking about their faith really openly on social media and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh, wow. But, it, you know, there are some benefits. And I've got two teenage daughters. My youngest is almost 18. And she was saying to me, like where we are in rural Cornwall, it's there's not a lot of young people, and actually she finds it really encouraging being able to engage with Christian content creators and seeing what, you know, bigger churches and what bigger groups of young people are doing. It's an interesting conversation, isn't it? And is it something that you have to think about now that you are, you know, like you have a platform, you have influence, you know, you are in the public eye?
I think so, and I feel that, you know, I'm really blessed to be able to like be in that kind of field, and you know, and I think it's part of my character just because I just love working with young people like so much. It's because maybe I didn't have that as much when I was younger, someone to like look up to in that, you know. I had a few mentors in our church, but nobody that was linked to music or the law like I am, and that seems to gain so much interest when I go to schools at times, or for example, performing at festivals and Wembley, you know, having a platform there and being very open about, listen, I started off being in the crowd where you were with hopes, with dreams, and here I am on stage being able to talk to you. And these are young people that, you know, I've received so many messages from saying, oh my gosh, you've encouraged me to get back into music, and could you give me advice on about the law, or, you know, you've got an amazing voice, like how did you be able to come out of your shell and, you know, apply that to your faith? You've taught me a lot of things. And that, for me, does far more than just having sort of influence on, you know, social media and, you know, talking to people individually, just being able to have that platform to show that I was also like you. And, you know, I may not, of course, have like all the answers in the world, but I depend very heavily on my faith, and I'm not ashamed to be able to proclaim that. I feel really, really blessed to be able to have that position. But that took a lot of experience, a lot of, again, channeling my relationship with God and really relying on him to be able to give me that confidence, the right things to say, and the right path to go down as well. So
Let's talk a little bit about some of those amazing things you've just mentioned. Ooh. Being on the stage at Wembley and, you know, practicing law. So yours is a fairly unusual life. I've been looking on your social media. Gosh, you're busy. But, you know, we were chatting a little bit before this interview started. Mm. So you juggle two very different jobs at the moment. Would you tell me a little bit about both of those?
Yes, of course. So my first one, I studied law at the University of Kent quite a while ago now. And I started working roughly, was it 2017 or 18? I started working at the Ministry of Justice, and I moved through different departments to where I am now, where I work and support the Judicial Office. I work in a small team called the International Team at the Judicial Office. It's part of the Ministry of Justice. And we support judges engaging internationally with, you know, international relations, supporting them when they deliver training in other countries around the world. So it does, you know, involve working with our judges and senior judges in different countries. And yeah, at the moment, I'm the head of secretariat to an organization called CIFOC, which is almost a dream job. I absolutely love it. It's mainly focused on commercial law, but we liaise with a lot of senior judges around the world, and we host big conferences and meetings to be able to discuss the rule of law, supporting training through with developing jurisdictions as well. And yeah, it's just something I sort of fell into. I did, you know, want to go through the training of becoming a lawyer, a solicitor. And just before COVID, when I was going to go back into studies, that's when all the music sort of kicked off. So in the midst of that, you know, getting to work from home a lot and, you know, a few times in the office, I also juggle work. I perform as Whitney Houston in a national tour called Queen of the Night, a tribute to Whitney Houston. And again, I sort of stumbled on that after my appearance on The Voice in 2021. And I've been working alongside, you know, a band. We tour the country, sometimes internationally. I have another understudy, so we share the dates and I do a few and she does a few as well. And yeah, I have an amazing band. We have so much fun touring, and pretty much by day I am working as, you know, in the international team through a legal field. By night I'm on stage with
Whitney Houston wigs
as Whitney Houston.
I love that. That's so cool.
Contrasting with that.
She's at the Ministry of Justice by day, and by night she's on stage performing Whitney Houston.
Exactly. Wow.
I mean, singing on a stage is one thing I could never dream of doing anyway. Performing as Whitney Houston is another. She must be like literally one of the handful of like most intimidating singers to try to emulate, shouldn't she? Yeah. How did you feel when you were first offered that job? Were you like, this is brilliant, or were you terrified?
It was probably a mixture of just me singing Whitney Houston, but also, yeah, I mean, I grew up listening and absolutely adoring Whitney Houston and her voice and her passion. Of course, the story of her life is bittersweet, but, you know, like us, like me, she, you know, grew up in the church. She sang in the church. And I think that's part of the story where I really related to her and her music. So to be asked to sing as Whitney Houston was, of course, like a dream come true. But yeah, there's a lot of pressure when it comes to singing Whitney.
Yeah.
And when I appeared on The Voice, there was a song, actually a Whitney Houston song, that my mentor, Will.i.am, told me to sing with another contestant. And that was a Whitney Houston song. So everything just almost fell into place. And the director of the show that I'm in now had seen me perform that song and clearly thought I was good enough. So,
Although
I may not have believed it 100% at the time. And it took a while to really kind of settle into that role.
And tell us a little bit about your journey into The Voice. How did that happen? And what was it like? What was Will.i.am like?
What you see is what you get with Will.i.am. He's really supportive and just, yeah, such a chilled mentor. I really, really enjoyed working with him and under his capacity. But it was almost like a leap of faith, I call it, when, you know, applying for The Voice. It was in the midst of when it was lockdown. So there was lockdown, nothing was running, you know, it slowed everyone down, definitely slowed me down at the time. And a lot of people had been telling me, you know, I should apply for it, go for it. I sort of made an effort to put myself out there and sing more songs, do more covers, perform a little bit more. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to try and apply for the Voice. And there was a few times I'd applied for X Factor previously and I wasn't successful, so I thought I'd almost given up then. But yeah, I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to apply and see where I get to. And yeah, one meeting online, of everything was of course virtual, so the experience was a little bit different than it would usually be. And of course there were doubts with that as well, like what if, you know, I might not go through, or that might not be successfully the first round. But yeah, I just thought, okay, God, you're going to lead the way for this one. And no matter how far I get, I can say that I've tried, I've done it. And yeah, getting all the way to the semifinals is not something I was ready to tick off. Things I was going to ever achieve in life. But that was victory enough for me to have been able to do it. And make my family and friends proud was, yeah, a bonus.
That's phenomenal. So tell me a little bit about, I mean, you've spoken obviously about singing in church as a kid. So obviously music is something that's always been present and always been a passion for you. What is it about performing on a stage that you love? Is it something that you know, you've always been like, I know that this is a calling that God has given me, or is it just one of many passions, or where does it sit for you?
Well, I think, it has just started off being a passion, just something, you know, I was always keen to be involved in anything musical. You know, I did a lot of poetry when I was younger and I used to transform that into songs. I remember vividly just playing like instrumentals or random jazz music and just writing on top of it. And I didn't realize at the time that that was just something I was so passionate and just eager to do every time I got home. And in school, they had like choirs. There's a few pictures of me in like young choirs and really enjoyed doing that. But I think over time, where I wanted to sort of make it a thing where I sort of try and take the lead and sing a little bit more out in the open, I used to get very anxious and I used to have panic attacks. A lot of people may not have known at the time, but I used to really, there were one or two of my friends that would see me behind the scenes and I'd get into a frenzy about being on stage and, you know, the fear of messing it up or the fear of letting anybody down. And I really tried to, you know, through secondary school and uni, I used to try and pray my way through it. I think there was a time where I thought this is physically something I can't control. I just ended up in shakes and bursting out in tears. There were many times where I gave up and then I came back again. I'd hide behind the scenes and play more music. But I think it was just a journey that I thought, if I'm able to get through this and it's one challenge that I can see before me that, you know, it's blocking any channels of any ever progressing in that area and field in that entertainment world, then, you know, I'd regret not trying. So, yeah, there were so many times where I just thought, you know, I'm going to pray my way through this and get through it. And it had worked. I was a leader in one of the Christian Performing Arts Society, and there's a choir and I led and I was the choir leader for that. And again, to be able to put myself forward for that was, again, I just had to hype myself up and pray my way through it and pray that God talks and sings and performs through me. And when my prayer life started to transform in that way, I could see a difference slowly. And it was almost paving the way to where I am now, just gradually sort of gaining that confidence, belief in myself, and also faith and trust in God that he would almost, like, there's a scripture in the Bible in Jeremiah, he would put the words in my mouth, like he will give me the things that he needs to be able to go according to his will. So yeah, my prayer life sort of changed when my outlook sort of changed as well.
It's interesting, isn't it, that so often, like, something that you often hear performers saying, that how nervous they get about performing, and it always, I do not perform in any shape or form, singing, acting, anything like that. So it's hard to imagine what it's like to sort of love doing something and also be so terrified to do it at the same time. I preach occasionally and I do get it in that respect. You're kind of like, yeah, I've done all my prep, but I'm still really nervous.
That's it, yeah.
But it is beautiful to hear you articulate that basically, like, you know, through that process, you are able to develop a reliance on God that you knew, like, that he would always be with you in that space, and that he would carry you into it and he would sustain you. And maybe that's probably a super helpful, healthy thing for a Christian in that world to know, oh, actually, I need God to be able to be able to do this. Like, this is not something that I can just do by myself.
Yeah. And there's always that element of comparing as well. You know, people around me were successful in the music industry or had an amazing voice, that had no problems, you know, jumping on stage and performing to the best of their ability and absolutely acing their performances. And that's something that I struggled with as well, like silently just looking around me and seeing, you know, the successes and countenance of others. But again, through prayer, God reminds you that every journey is different. And, you know, I think I'm glad that I went through that process because it shows growth, not through my vocal ability, but just through my faith and my prayer life. Because once I stopped depending on myself and trusting myself or even being hard on myself and put all that energy into just trusting God and saying, oh, God, you lead the way. I never used to even have a powerful voice. So if you think about Whitney and her style and you think how I'm able to emulate her vocal styles and ability now, I never used to have that power. And I remember praying, like, Lord, if I'm ever going to have like vocal abilities like the Mariah Careys and the Whitneys and the powerhouses of this world, like, how would I ever get there? It's something that I cannot see. And that's faith, when you pray and say, Lord, get me to that ability where I can confidently sing in this sort of style and how I kind of envisage. And yeah, over time, again, through practice, through letdowns and failures, you know, you build that up. And I can look back now and see that growth and see that I'm nowhere near where I was before, and it wasn't my time then. So it's time in, it's growth, and it's just knowing to sort of stay in your lane through Christ and not going to pay yourself the tar bills.
So when you got to the point where you were applying for The Voice, were you at a more confident point then, or did you still struggle with nerves through that process?
Yeah, I think I prepared myself. I did a lot of like open mics as well during that period. I said, you know, I'm just going to try and put myself out there. Again, I had great friends who encouraged me to go and to support me in the background, friends and my family. They're literally number one fans. But by then I felt ready. I did feel sort of like, you know, what will be, I will go, I'll try. But didn't remove the fact that I was still very like fearful and didn't know what I was heading into. So yeah, there was a slight sense of intimidation there. But yeah, I feel that during that period, I felt a little bit more ready than I had been when I first wanted to start applying and auditioning. So it was a bit of a mixture. Of course, you're buzzing with excitement and adrenaline, but also freaking out because it's being viewed by millions of people around the world.
Yeah.
So you try to remove that, you know, the latter part out of your head. But
and how old were you at this time?
I was 25, I believe. Yeah,
so still quite young.
Still quite young, but compared to a lot of people still, you know, auditioning at that time, some of them were much younger. Mm. Oh my gosh, these people are so much younger than I am. And, you know, there's some older as well who's had experience. So either way, I just looked at myself compared to other categories. I'm thinking, I don't know where I sit, but I'm just going to go out there and do my best.
Well, like you say, it's a good reminder, isn't it, to all of us, like to not compare ourselves. That, like God's plan is God's plan, and God's timing for us. That you know, not, and we do not have to worry about whether we're ahead or behind the curve or anywhere else compared to anyone else.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
So tell me what it's like to be a Christian in that kind of space, because I think sometimes the perception is kind of, oh, it must be super tough to be a Christian in the entertainment industry or the music industry or the theatre industry. What is it like, and how do you approach faith and performance?
It can be tough. I mean, the entertainment industry, you know, is always going to be quite challenging. You're going to meet a lot of people who are Christian, who are not, who have morals, who have not, who've got values. But I think if you know who you are in Christ, and I know that sometimes that can sound quite cliche, I think you can stand your ground and you know what God wants for you. You know what you deserve as well and what's owed to you. So I feel it is difficult because you're going to have challenging discussions. You have to kind of make challenging decisions that may affect like your journey and your roots. And you don't want to compromise on some of the values that you have. You don't want to, you know, start steering away from what God has planned for you. And some of the music that I perform, of course, with Whitney Houston, it's sort of separate to the music that I actually write, but you know, there's the pop and the R&B, and some people feel that that shouldn't be in the field of Christian music. But it's funny, every time I go on stage, from the very beginning, from the very first show I started in like 2022, when I first started the shows, I always like say a prayer. I always, you know, bless me and ask God to bless the band, but also to touch those who are coming to see the show for the first time, whether they're Christian or not, to touch them in their points of needs, you know, to allow them to be felt by the Holy Spirit. Like whatever I have in countenance, you know, I give out, that God will spread that light in other people. So I feel that you can still make sure that you apply your faith in wherever you are, as long as you're not obviously put in compromising positions, which some people are. and just know who you are in Christ. And some of the music that I write is a bit more uplifting. I really steer towards the gospel aspect. You know, a lot of people through the fans and support of the show will go onto my page and my music and be uplifted by some of the music that I write. So you can touch people and reach out to people in that space as well. So yeah, I can't lie and say I have everything all figured out, but I always ask God to guide me through those situations, because sometimes, yeah, you don't want to, you need to be quite firm and assertive. That's another thing. I think that wisdom, the prayer of wisdom is what I always say that you need in these situations, because, yeah, I feel that sometimes you never know that there are people who are not always going to be for your good, and, you know, that God is always got your back and always is for your good. So yeah, that's what I'd say about those kind of spaces.
What advice do you think you would give, like, your 16-year-old self if you were looking back now? What would you say to you?
Okay. Hold to say, that's a good question. I would definitely say rely on your faith, depend on God. And yeah, just pray for God's wisdom and guidance, because I feel that in times where I haven't felt that, you know, there's sometimes you feel a bit of like, God, where is this taking me? Where is it leading me? I can't see the end product. I don't see what the goal is. Every route leads to where God wants you to go, or where he needs you to be. So yeah, it's just relying on your faith. Even though you do not see, you got to trust God. Because the journey has been an interesting one, ups and downs, through different paths where I never thought I'd be. But looking back, I can see why I've been taken down that route. I can see why God has led me through darker times and places where it seems like a desert and there's nothing there. And you come out of it successful and triumphant and you're victorious. It doesn't always mean like winning the goal or winning the voice or anything like that. It will take you through different paths and there's always something on the other side. So I think I'd say trust God, because there are times where your faith will try and waver and you've got to really stand firm on what God has planned for you.
Can you think of a moment when your faith in God was really tested and what helped you to get through it?
I'd say maybe for many, of course, I'm sure this people would relate, but through COVID, I feel there's been one time, because you know, lucky enough, of course, I was still working over that time, but I had plans beforehand, you know, plans of investment and, you know, other roles and, you know, other music opportunities. And yeah, and that's where I thought, you know, where everyone around me has progressed in certain areas, I feel that I remain sort of stagnant, if that makes sense. And I would never have foreseen just, you know, the faith of just applying for the voice and where it's taken me now and the opportunities it's brought. And, you know, at the time trying to, you know, assist with the church and the youth groups, like, okay, then what's the next step? And I think that's where it has it sort of wavered. Like, I wasn't sure of what God has planned for me or what God's will was for me. And even afterwards as well, in the midst of all the heat and the noise and the rough seas, you know, with everything going on, how busy I am now as well, there are times where you still have those thoughts creeping in, like, what's the next step? Like, what is my destiny? What's God's will for me? What's the next step? It's always the fear of the unknown. And sometimes that can bring anxiety, you know, for others as well. I'm sure many people can relate, where you don't know where you're going, or what the next step is, and what the plan is. But silence doesn't always mean that, you know, God isn't present. God is very much present in the silent times. And I've learned that a lot, to know that you just rely on God's, you know, hand, and he will guide you to where you need to be. Just continue to show love to others. And know that God loves you and wants what's best for you. You know, he knew us before we even, you know, even thought of. So he would, of course, know what plans he has. And that encourages me a lot, especially through dark times where in the midst of everything going on, you still feel quite lonely, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. Right, so, let's talk about the other completely different side of your life. You work for the Ministry of Justice, you studied law, you did quite a lot of work with CAFOD, the Catholic charity. You ran the London Marathon for them this year. What? Yeah. On top of everything else, you just thought, I'm going to squeeze in a little cheeky marathon there.
I know. It was really great to do that as one of the first initiatives, you know, as the ambassador of CAFOD, which was amazing. I mean, I've been, you know, supporting CAFOD in different ways through smaller events and fundraising, but to actually be an ambassador for them has been amazing. And that was my first sort of will. I was like, yeah, of course I'll do the marathon.
Well, I guess, you must have to keep fairly fit if you're performing so often on stage. It's probably like fairly rigorous, isn't it?
And also having a routine of just, you know, keeping fit by the side.
But, so tell us a little bit about CAFOD and what they do and what your involvement is with them.
Absolutely, yeah. So CAFOD is the Catholic Overseas for Overseas Development. So, yeah, so we do a lot of fundraising. At the moment, we are working with some poorer communities, especially with the cancelled debt movement. So it's almost like giving a call to all the governments in some of the developing jurisdictions to cancel debt, to be able to support local communities, students and those who are studying as well, to be able to progress. And the agriculture world is another area that we support. And yeah, I've always been really keen to support not only just, you know, poorer communities. Africa, I'm originally from Nigeria, and I've done quite a few sort of initiatives to support communities there, but this one spreads quite far and reach communities around the world. So we did the marathon with a small group of us, raised a lot of money for this particular cause. The event that we did at Wembley was also to show awareness and to really spread awareness about the council debt movement, which is quite high up on the priority at the moment. I'm looking forward to other smaller charity events that we're going to be, fundraising events that we're going to be doing throughout the year.
So what came first in your life? Was it the love of performing and singing, or was it the justice and the law stuff, or have they always just been hand in hand and this is just two sides of your personality?
Yeah, well, sort of the two sides, but it's always been the singing. I mean, far as I can remember, it's definitely been the music and the singing, performing, getting involved in like productions. Like one of the earliest memories I have was performing with my school the story of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, and it was just one of my favorite like events and the musicals to be a part of, and that really just sparked my love of just performing in general. That came first. Over time, when we had to start thinking about like the career and being from sort of a, you know, traditional African household, it's all about studying and making sure that you progress and you focus on your career. And as much as you love music, Kadinike is not, you know, that's not a serious not a serious career to be going into, or security anyway, according to my parents. So I decided to study law when I was in University of Kent in Canterbury. Absolutely amazing. I loved the 3 years of working there. And I did have a lot of interest in the law. And over time, through organizations that support like the rule of law and helps to promote that and make sure that there's some, at least focus on sentencing guidelines is some area that we're looking at within our works and our projects at the moment. So it helps other communities, almost sort of aids them with their sort of legal paths. But the music has always been running parallel to that since then. But there is a...
That's really interesting there that it was Joseph that you mentioned, because Joseph has this really strong like justice development thread that runs through it as well.
Exactly. Went on to be the prime minister, you know.
So yeah, exactly.
That definitely
helped his country survive the famine.
Exactly. Can't say the same about the jealousy and the brothers. I don't have that many brothers or siblings, but yeah, it actually definitely resonated with me.
So how do your parents feel about your music career now? Are they still this is not going to pay the bills? Or
I think that's changed now, which is very kind of ironic. How it's just like, oh yeah, that's not my dad's. Oh, that's my daughter up there. But so just like, kind of fake. Focus on your books and your studies, please. You can leave that one to the side. quite difficult, actually, for an African household. But they have all been really, really supportive. They really, you know, enjoy. I did the O2 Indigo in November last year.
Wow.
I've done the likes of the Royal Albert Hall a couple of years ago. And again, these are just, you know, no one in my family is really kind of gone into the music or entertainment world like I have at the moment. So this is very fresh, very new for them. The first time they've seen it, I don't think my daddy was still questioning, like, was that really you on that stage? It's not something they're used to. So yeah, it's I love just making them proud and, you know, being able to almost set, because I've got a lot of younger cousins and younger, some of the eldest of three, and yeah, to be able to inspire them and work hard and trust God. They can see that and also be guided by that as well.
Mm. You spoke earlier about like your early involvement in your own youth group and about your love of youth work. Are you still involved in that kind of stuff? Do you still like coming alongside young people?
Yeah, once in a while. So yeah, and because of the busy schedule, it's harder to keep that running every week. And they try and do it every so often, although it's very difficult. I mean, you need to have very dedicated leaders in the church, and you know, yeah, it's difficult because of course everyone's got their day job and their lives and you know, priorities. But yeah, once in a while, you know, I still go to my parish. I mean, that's every week I go and I see them and I speak to them more on a mentoring one-to-one these days. There's a few that I've even given like work experience for where I work, so I'm able to cross that over and help them out when they can. I also, again, this is prior to all the voice and everything, because it's timing. I don't have the time to do it as much, but I'm also a black belt taekwondo instructor. So I know. So I haven't been able to teach as much, of course, nowadays, but I do go back once in a while. And that's really good to be able to still see them grow and progress and, you know, still teach where I can and make an appearance. So yeah, I still try and get involved as much as I can when I actually have an opportunity to, when they have sort of work, workshops. And certain festivals and events, I also go to some of the schools and they invite me to speak to them, very similar, just talk about my faith. I'll do a few songs, I'll get them involved up and singing. Again, being able to relate a little bit closer to the young people. I wouldn't say I'm that young anymore, but at the same time, just maybe, you know, mannerisms and my personality, I think I can relate to young people. And being able to just, like I said, encourage and inspire them. I just see it as a gift that God has given me, and I just want to really utilize them and utilize that gift and just allow them to shine and let God use them, you know, tell them that God can use anybody. And yeah.
Well, it's quite a hard time to be a young person right now, isn't it? There's a lot of pressures, and you know, we've talked about how difficult COVID was for so many people, and for young people in particular, it was incredibly disruptive. Anxiety is at all time high. I mean, these are some of the reasons that some people think that young people are turning back to God, because they can't find the answers anywhere. Right. So, I think it's incredibly inspiring when they hear stories like from people like you who have, you know, achieved your dreams, who have made it there even when it felt like really far away and very nerve-wracking, and how you dealt with those nerves, how you kept pressing into God, how you kept your faith central to that journey. You know, I think it's incredibly inspiring, and it's really important actually that we keep having those conversations. And it's almost like the Bible tells us, isn't it, to keep remembering the things that God has done to the next generation, so that they know, oh, God is real, God's with me in this, God can lead me forward.
Yeah, and as well as we talk about it from the past tense, like, he kept me going. I don't make it a secret to say, look, I haven't completely worked it. I'm in a great place at the moment, but I still have these challenges at times, and it's not a case of, you know, this is still an ongoing thing. I can develop my faith a lot more You know, we're all human. We all fall short of God's glory. We all feel sometimes we're not good enough. But, you know, it is a case of this is a thing that you still need to keep praying. You still need to, you know, read the word, understand like what God's will is for you. And yeah, we're still going to keep having those, you know, thoughts and feelings where it's just inevitable, but it's how you get through them. So that's one thing that I make it very clear that I figured it out, but I haven't fully figured it out yet. I'm a better place than I was before, but even still, I could be in a better place. And I'm still working through that. It's still a journey, you know.
So, yeah, and we need that in the church, don't we? That honesty to be able to say, oh, like, that, you know, just because I'm an adult now or I'm on a stage or I'm preaching and leading a church or, you know, I've got a professional job or whatever it is you do, like the assumption that you reach your destination at some point and now I've got everything sorted and it's all neat and tidy and lovely is frankly ridiculous. Yeah. And it's not a message anyone needs to hear, and particularly our young people, I think it's much more healthy for them to hear, oh, this is a lifelong, you know, being a follower of Jesus is lifelong, and you can always go deeper, you can always do better, you can, you know, just keeps going, keeps developing.
Exactly. But that element of peace is what I kind of land with, that despite the fact that it's still going, I'm still working it out, knowing that I have God and I am really, you know, trying to develop that even more. I just feel everything that goes on, you just get that sense of peace within you. And that's God-given peace, and peace that's not of this world. Mm. And that's definitely underrated, and it can only be achieved if you try and sort of, go deeper. So yeah, it's a blessing. It has its challenging, but completely blessed.
So what's next? Do you have grand plans, or is it just kind of keep on with the tour and keep on with the work and see where it goes?
Yeah, well, at the moment with the work, I'm, you know, still working alongside the touring, but sort of reducing that over time. I've got some music to release this year, which is amazing.
Exciting.
Preparing for the next claim next year, so that'll be 2027 in March. I'll get the dates up soon, but the next Flame is taking place next year.
So tell us what Flame is quickly.
Of course. So Flame is a big congress of Catholic youth, and not only Catholic, just young people around the country. We all meet, and there's musicians, there's amazing speakers from around the world. It's pretty much a full day of just celebrating being in each other's presence. And it's usually followed by a theme as well. So each Flame, every 2 years, will have a theme. And it's just a loads of fun. 10,000 young people under one roof.
It was at Wembley last time, wasn't it? It was huge.
Yeah, at Wembley, it's always at Wembley, the Opera Arena. Yeah, wow. So I think they'll be doing their probably fourth or fifth one so far. I was involved in the first two, but it is such an incredible event, and it's it's grown ever since. So to be part of that and to have even spoken and told my faith journey at the penultimate one, it's been such a privilege.
And when can we look out for new music coming up from you?
Hopefully in the next couple of months, and in the summer as well. So I've got a good two or three coming out and an EP towards the end of the year. So I am.
What do you write about in your own music? What are some of the themes we can expect?
It's more like uplifting, faith, encouraging, inspiring music. It has a lot of, some of them are pop sort of twists and inspiration behind it, but I released Best Version, which is a couple of years ago, well, last year actually, before the last Flame event. Best Version was released, and My Crown has been released as well. So I've released two so far, and again, it's just really encouraging people that, you know, needs to be uplifted, to wear their crown, wear it with faith.
So can I ask you a question about your music? I know this is sometimes contentious for people who are musicians and Christians. Do you define yourself as a Christian musician or artist, or are you a Christian who makes music? Where do you sit on that whole debate?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I try not to really kind of box myself. It's a question that I battle with as well, you know. Should we really kind of box ourselves and you only make Christian music, you only make other music? I've written different types of influencing music, and, you know, also I've written a lot of R&B songs. They may not be sort of like hardcore going out to other, you know, styles as other musicians would, but it's just a reflection of sort of love experiences and relationships and friendships. And I like to do that through the pop style or R&B style. I've written a lot of inspiration music written through Afrobeats recently. So it's hard to really place myself. I'd like to describe myself as a Christian who writes music as opposed to, you know, gospel and Christian. So, yeah, I know there is a debate that you're cool, of course, that a lot of people are involved in and just identify where they are. But sort of boxing yourself, you can reach out and, you know, show yourself to be a Christian through different means, and music is one way of doing that as well.
Well, that's kind of what you were saying about playing Whitney, wasn't it? Like, kind of, you know, this, you know, yeah, it's a secular show, it's not particularly about faith, but in some respect you can find elements of hope and the Christian story and in many other types of story. And kind of, I think as Christians, one of the things we hope to bring to life wherever we do it is the fragrance of Christ, and you hope that people engage with you and the things you do or create in a way that does point to Jesus somehow, even if it's, you know, it doesn't have to always be sort of super in someone's face, does it?
Yeah, exactly. And especially this day and age now, when you're entering like the secular world and there's a lot being posted on social media and drawing people into realms that, of course, aren't all godlike or Christian-like, I feel that you can reach those people who have no faith or on other faiths, and being able to, through your characteristics, your personality, how you reach them through your music, be able to show, you know, the light or what Christ is like, and to be godlike in those areas as well. So especially, you know, when you go into schools and young people, if they don't, of course, attend a Christian led church or school, these are sort of the places where you can, you know, reach out to them and through your music sort of get them to sing along. I've gone to some of the schools that aren't like Christian schools, and they're singing along to some of the songs that I've sung, like God's Best Version of Me is one of them. They, I am, or I learned to be God's best version of me. And people that don't have faith are singing those words and singing that. And I see that as almost like a prayer, as, you know, there's a certain verse that's like a prayer, like, remember, take note that you are perfectly made. He made you in his image and he made no mistake. And those are the sort of lines that people are singing back to me that don't have faith, and, you know, people that really love the song. And yeah, I sang another song based on Psalm 23. That's like one of my favorite psalms. And I've written something that I performed at Wembley, and everyone singing that back to me, again, it's just, it's through prayer, and they don't know that they're actually praying something that's in scripture. So I feel that, yeah, just in answer to your question, it's just that you can sort of be the artist that draws people or turns people's eyes closer to Christ in that way.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's been really, really fun talking to you.
Thank you. And you. Thank you for your time and for having me.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hi, it's Gavin.
I'm Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.